Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Shankleberg and James Kovacevic's on the line. Hey, James.
Hey, Fred. How you doing?
Hey, pretty good. I believe when this episode comes out, we're going to be a quarter of the way to our 300th episode. So we're around 225, give or take one or two, depending on how the post-editing goes. Traffic's been great. We're getting good comments back from folks. People are going to reliability.fm, where there's now Rooted in Reliability, your show, which I listened into a last couple of episodes, James. You're having way too much fun. Seriously. You get to talk to these great guys, right? And some of them, I don't know if you're recording one long session with them and then breaking it up, or if you get them back over a couple of sessions, but you've covered some great stuff and some great topics. And the show is showing it. You're getting a pretty decent following. So I'm envious. You've got a neat show going there.
Oh, thank you. Sometimes, you know, it's one long one. Sometimes we break it up into two or three different ones. It just depends on what the topic is and sometimes how long that particular topic goes on for.
That's right. Yeah, there was, I should have made some notes. There was one, I'm drawing a complete blank on the guy's name. I'm sorry. He does vibration analysis.
Jason Tranter.
Jason Tranter. I was parked in the car listening to the end of that one. He's talking about, you know, just the process of analyzing this stuff and the different ways of doing it. And I know just enough of it that I could follow your discussion. But on the other end of it, I know how important it is to get good data, to get good insights into what's going on in your equipment. And so, but that's part of what I wanted to talk to you about, James, is, you know, there's guys like Jason out there that have these really cool ability to pull in information off our equipment. And I know that you and I have mentioned it in the past of like oil analysis and using an infrared camera to look at your equipment. There's systems now that you can use a microphone to listen for changes in the frequency emitted by your bearings and look at bearing wear. I think vibration's better. There's all these tools out there kicking off all kinds of data, but you know, do you see people using that stuff or doing the statistical analysis of this stuff?
So I see right now, I see a mixed bag. If you think of very specific predictive maintenance where you have a vibration tech going around collecting data, if they're trained, they're using that information, they're trending it, they're using that to make decisions.
Okay.
If I look at organizations that I've been working with over the past little bit, do they have failure data in their CMMS where they're using to run a Weibull analysis or a reliability growth analysis or anything like that? Mm-hmm. No, I don't see a lot of that going on at the moment. I think part of it has to do with not having good data in the first place or not capturing the right data. That is two of the major things. The other thing is with a lot of the smaller organizations, they don't have a reliability engineer on staff. So in order to do that sort of analysis, it falls to the planner or the supervisor or the manager to do at this point is what I'm seeing.
Yeah. A couple of my engagements have been to dive into the CMMS and pull out data and then see what we can do. And it was kind of a toe in the water by the ops folks to say, and the maintenance folks saying, is this stuff useful or not? We don't know how to do it. And if it proves out to be useful, then, you know, then teach us how to do it and we'll go do something with it. But that often gets to be a rocky start because it might be one piece of data that you really need. You replace the motor. That's great. But why? you know, was it an electrical problem? Was it a, and then anecdotally you talk to the techs and it's a mix of like three or four different things. So the types of analysis you can do that become useful are really limited, but it gives it a chicken and the egg thing, right? You got to have the right data before you can do the analysis. And then if you don't have it and you're not really sure if it's going to be useful or not, you're kind of stuck.
Yeah. And it all goes back to, you know, setting up your CMMS properly. You can set it up so that when you do have a failure, it requires these three fields to be populated in order to close that work order. Mm-hmm. Granted, people can just pick the first one or the third one or the seventh one, whatever they choose. Mm-hmm. But by forcing people to start recording data, it's a step in the right direction, I think.
Well, I certainly agree. And I also agree that it comes with, it's got to be useful to the tech. If I'm filling out a form and it adds another 20 seconds to yet another form I got to fill out, I'll get through it as quick as I can. But if I know that this data is going to be used to make sure I have the right parts at the right time, or I can help improve the uptime, of, you know, they can see the connection to where it helps them, then I think it's a way to help make that happen. There's always checks and balances, but I think that the carrot kind of idea often works really well. But, you know, even with the data though, some of the stuff I see are really, really basic in, well, you know, my opinion of MTBF. But I'll see an organization, tracking, reliability using just averages, and they'll compare a 1 hour run of a piece of equipment to a 2 week run and use MTBF to compare the two of them. And, you know, this, or plot simple, average downtime per shift. And are really missing the trends or the basic, patterns that are occurring in our data just by using basic, really elementary type ways of analyzing the data.
But I think, you know, if I think about it, if you're a maintenance planner, typically you've come up through the ranks from a tradesman to a planner. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they have an understanding of statistics. And I know prior to getting into this field, I didn't want anything to do with statistics. Getting into the field, I had to learn it.
It's been an informal joke of mine. Anytime I start introducing a statistics section, is like, and it's usually to engineers, is how many of you enjoyed your undergrad stats course? You know, and it's usually met with laughter. There's usually one or two people that raise their hand and say, yeah, they got it. It's not a required course anymore. The younger folks are not even seeing a basic statistics course. It's maybe a couple of days in their mechanical engineering course. Yet I agree with you. It's vital.
Yeah. And not everyone has to get a master's in statistics. They just need to understand some of the basic processes. How do you organize data? How do you sort data? How do you use data? And some basic analysis. And that would go a long way, I think.
Oh, it certainly would. But I mean, we in the reliability field, and if I'm a reliability engineer in a plant looking at the CMS data, I kind of am jumping into the deep end of the pool, right? Related to statistics, it's a simple plot of, you know, failures for over time, can just show my downtime per shift, right? I've seen that in a number of different facilities. And the metric is reduced downtime. And that's, I think, helps with the right behavior, but it doesn't help us peel back that an understanding of what's going on.
Yeah. And that's why you gotta start recording data, even if it's, you know, what do you need? You need life data, right? The day it was put in, the day it died, and why did it die?
Right.
Those three basic points is enough to start doing meaningful analysis. And that's what needs to be recorded in the CMMS to start. Obviously, we can get way more fancy and record a bunch more information, which then allows us to do different things or look at problems from different angles. But mm-hmm. basic, you need the life data, birth date, end date, and why.
That's right. I would add downtime. If repairs are, say, in a 24-hour shift, if repairs are 4 hours or more, you need to know that. It affects the kind of analysis you can do. But just the life data, and if I just plot, if it's a repairable system, say a bottling piece of equipment on a plant, and just the count of failures with over time. So I turn it on at 8 a.m. and this particular one I'm thinking of is at 8:02. It got a jam and we had to fix that. And so on all through the day, they had hundreds of downing events and most of them were very quick. But by plotting just time and then the cumulative number of events of repairs that were required is called a mean cumulative function. And so they had data that could permit that to occur if the repairs were relatively quick versus the duration we were looking at. So a few seconds to clear a jam or 10 minutes to align a motor that was, those kind of things are fine. But the analysis, I taught them how to do it, and you can do it in Excel. You can get really good graphics out of it. And within about 5 minutes of training, they were able to interpret it. I like to say even their managers could figure out how to interpret it. But it gave them an insight to the data that they already collected. And it's, like you said, it's pretty straightforward, basic statistics, but it's one of those I just don't see. And so my real question to you, James, is, well, why is that? And now why were you not interested in statistics prior to getting into the role you got now?
It's scary.
Why? I mean, nuclear physics is scary because if you're doing an experiment, you don't do it right, you can get radiated.
You going to high school, you always heard how that was the worst course ever. And it wasn't required. So if it was the worst course ever and it's not required, why would I take it? Now, granted, now I look at, I should have probably taken it, would have made the stats course in college a little bit easier. But back then it was, why do I need this? And if it's the hard course and I don't have to, why do it?
That's right. I remember that from high school. People would take calculus before they would take statistics, it's one of those that, in my undergraduate course, we had a statistics class and it was really only used because the physics department made us take it because we were doing experiments. We were running experimental data and running different design of experiments. We needed to understand the basics of probabilities and stuff like that to just do our coursework. So I had an immediate application and I think I caught the bug at that point and it was never really afraid of it because I used it right away. It wasn't any of the red beads and white bead type experiments, or gumballs in a jar. Didn't do a lot of that.
Our reliability engineers, our planners, our team maintenance supervisors, whatever the case is, I think what they can do or benefit from is a very basic introduction to statistics, right? Like you said, within 5 minutes, they could start interpreting some of that data. So maybe it's a slow introduction to it. It's not a full-fledged course where you're validating hypothesis and all this other wonderful stuff. It is, here's a Pareto chart. Here's what a Pareto chart is. Here's how you organize data. Here's the data you need. Basic stuff like that so people can start looking at data from a useful perspective.
Well, I imagine some of these tools like Pareto and others are built into some CMS reporting programs, aren't they?
Some maybe. And some do. Some have a little bit more advanced analytics depending on what you're doing. But even people may look at that but not really know what it is, right? Or what does it mean behind it? And then you can start getting into a little bit more advanced stuff, like you said, the mean cumulative plot. start looking at stuff like that. So maybe it's an introduction too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree with you. And I found, you know, just about any kind of training, it doesn't have to be statistics. Statistics has the burden of what you mentioned. It's got a bad rap in high school and in undergrad college, which still puzzles me because I understand some of the concepts are counterintuitive. The language is arcane. A lot of it's from the 20s when Fisher and others were first sorting out a lot of these algorithms and details. A lot of the sum of squares you see a lot in statistics work is because they didn't have a computer. They had a mechanical adder. And so adding numbers was a whole lot easier than doing anything else. So a lot of the analysis is built around a mechanical adding machine. Things like that add a shroud of, there's not a single answer. It's a probability. There's a chance. There's uncertainty. And,
yes.
And to a large extent, that's what you and I do when we look at data now is trying to understand that variability, trying to understand the uncertainty of what's going to happen next and when things fail in particular. But I agree with you. Is a basic intro to focused on how do I interpret this data so that I can move towards predictive maintenance, or I can move towards sparing strategies that make more sense rather than anecdotally.
And I think that is one of the key pieces, is it's got to be practical for what people are doing with it.
Mm-hmm.
To sit there and validate hypotheses and all these other things, is a maintenance planner going to take the time to do that? Probably not. We need practical stuff that they can use and deploy right away. Like if we're going to teach it, they got to be able to apply it to make sure they learn it and it sticks with them, right?
Mm-hmm. Now, here's another question for you that's related: is in the product development world, there's a lot of Lean Six Sigma, and there's a whole thrust, especially through quality departments in the design world and beyond in the manufacturing world. To do green belt, black belt type projects and programs, and many of those have a heavy dose of statistics and application of statistics in them. I know that Lean is. I've seen a few articles, and I've seen a bit of traffic about Lean and Six Sigma in the asset management world, but I don't. It's just not prevalent. I don't see it near as much as in the product world. Is that a true, a good reading of that?
Yeah, I see a lot of use of it in manufacturing facilities,
mm-hmm.
but typically it's not a maintenance activity. It's a quality activity or it's a product engineer activity. Mm-hmm. It's something like that.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, I haven't seen it used that extensively by maintenance staff or asset management staff.
Yeah, but you know, I'm thinking of a Lean example is just having your toolkit laid out so that you have the right tools for the job you're doing and not all the extra stuff. It just means that, like, I was in one factory and they had these changeover boards. They had all of the parts they needed. They had the exact tools kind of in sequence across this board. So there wasn't a lot of thinking, oh, I need a 3/8 inch socket. It was right there on the board next to the piece of equipment they needed to attach. You know, it was so organized. It was scary. But they could do a turnaround on a line or a changeover on a line really fast.
Yeah. But when I see that stuff, that's SMED or single minute exchanger dies. It's that type of methodology
mm-hmm.
at work. Maybe using some of the principles from Six Sigma, but when you talk to manufacturing, it's a SMED activity. It's a startup time reduction activity. It's something like that. It's
yeah.
typically what it's referred to as. So it might just be a naming thing then.
Yeah, it might be. You know, so Lean, I've seen hints of it being applied, but it doesn't translate into the statistics. There's
no.
It's, you know, if you've got six different seals that you could put on pieces of equipment and you're doing it regularly, do you buy the most expensive one or the cheapest one? And how do you know which one's doing the job for you? that's an application for a design of experiments or some basic statistics even. So that's where I could see these applications panning out and really making fundamental improvements to the maintenance posture of a plant.
But once again, we need to make sure we have that training, and then we need to make sure we have the data and the support for people to actually do use that training and the data together to get a result.
Yeah. Or they can call you. You can come out and do it for them. As much as you love the statistics. Yeah.
Or you.
Yeah. I guess we shouldn't propose. But I think part of this is goes back to, you know, is deep down, I think there's a hesitancy or a fear of using statistics. We're drowning in data. We've got way more data than we need in most factories I've ever been in. And sometimes we're limited by, we just don't have the right data, or it's not done very well or clean. There's lots of missing pieces to it. There's all kinds of noise in that. Usually those problems go away once we use the data to make a difference, and then it becomes a virtuous cycle to help things happen. But the training part and keeping it practical may be our best bet to getting past that hesitancy. That this is, I think your term was scary.
Yes.
Yeah. I have to tweet about that, I guess. James thinks stats are scary. Yeah. See where that goes anywhere.
I did. I'm a little more less intimidated by him now, but back in high school, that's what they were. They were a big scary thing I didn't want to take because I didn't have to.
That's right. Yeah. But, you know, that's still prevalent, though. People in spots where they really do need the good statistics background and knowledge are just shying away from it. And I think there's you're leaving a lot of money on the table when you do that. That's yep. Unfortunate.
Absolutely. But now you have programs like Minitab, for example, that will tell you if the data is a good fit. If not, this is what you can do to make it work. They have all that stuff built in now.
That's true. Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, though. You know, you can give somebody a perfect tool. If they use it inappropriately, they'll get bad results.
So, absolutely. But people might be relying on that instead of understanding what's going on.
Yeah, I, the more I think about it, I think your idea of just doing the basic, very applied, fundamental understanding of this stuff. Because if you're going to go to Minitab, you need to know which end of the wrench to use, basically.
Yeah, absolutely.
You need to know enough. You can get in trouble real quick just pushing buttons on that thing or any of those packages, not just Minitab. Yeah. No, I think there's
couldn't agree more.
Yeah. There's a lot of room to grow there. So, let's ask our listeners, you know, if you're in a spot like where James is, like had thought, you know, statistics is scary, and you realize that there's probably an advantage there to mastering that, you know, what do you need to get moving on that? What do you need to actually make that work? I know with the Ascendo Reliability site we're putting together, we have a bunch of tutorials, all kinds of things, but we don't have the case studies that make it practical. And so if that's something that would be helpful for you, let us know. And we'll see what we can do about putting those things together. If you need more training or application with your data, that kind of stuff, then that's a different solution. So let us know. Head over to reliability.fm. You can find plenty of spots to add comments or give us some feedback. On this topic in particular, what could we do to help you apply statistics wisely in your facility? And then on any other topic, if there's something you'd like us to talk about, if you are so terrified by statistics, I'm doing big air quotes here, and want us to talk about something different, let us know. We're always looking for input and feedback on what topics are of most interest to you. So once again, head over to reliability.fm, and we look forward to hearing from you. So with that, James, I know that this episode's coming out in over a month, so I hesitate to ask what you're doing because unless you know your schedule for July, August, this summer.
In about a month from now, 6 weeks, I'll be heading down to Brazil for 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
So I'll be down there for some work. What else? And then working on getting some papers and presentations ready for SMRP and PMAC, working through some of that as well, probably at that point. So, yeah, that's in about a month. That's what I'll be doing.
All right. Well, it's, I don't know. Depending on where you're going in Brazil, it's a big country. I guess July isn't a bad time because most of it's below the equator. So I think it's just going to be hot no matter where you go.
Yeah, I'll be up in the northern part of the country, closer to the equator, so it'll probably be warm no matter what time of the year I go.
That's right. Yeah, that should be interesting. You've been there before?
No, it'll be my first time down there, so should be interesting.
Oh, yeah. No, that should be fascinating. Hopefully their politics are all sorted out and they have somebody that's actually doing not a corrupt politician in office. From what I've heard, they impeached one, and then the person replacing him is now indicted, I think. So
I'm gonna stay away from that topic.
There you go. Yeah, that's probably safe. All right, well, thanks, James. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.